I'm gonna be round my vegetables. I'm gonna chow down my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable.
Hi, I'm Kat.
And I'm Rebecca. And we're from Roots and Recipes, a group based in Montreal whose mission is to collect and share recipes and kitchen stories from first and second generation immigrants. On today's podcast, we're going to be talking about Yotam Ottolenghi's newest cookbook, Plenty More.
This vegetable-centric cookbook, published late last year, is a follow-up to 2011's bestseller, Plenty. The book is divided up by cooking methods, like tossed, mashed, roasted, and unlike Plenty, it also features a chapter on desserts that they titled Sweetened. You won't find the word vegetarian on the cover of this cookbook, but it is completely vegetarian, which fits in with Ottolenghi's mission to spotlight vegetables and to make them appealing to everyone, whether they eat meat or not. And we'll talk a bit more about this later.
For now, we would like to welcome you to the first ever Roots and Recipes podcast.
So before we start talking about the cookbook, let me tell you why we're talking about this book at all. We both attended a program called Tent Food that dealt with the intersection between food and Jewish culture. I went to New York and Rebecca went to LA. It's a whole week of eating and discussing food with 20 other participants. We visited restaurants, food businesses, and got to speak to all kinds of interesting people like chefs, food writers, and scholars. It was a pretty good way to spend the week.
Definitely.
And it doesn't stop there. As Tent alumni, they put out a list of stuff every month, and you have the option to choose one thing from that list that you then have to review or give your opinion about on social media. And in return, you get reimbursed for this.
So that brings us back to the book. Plenty More was on the October 2014 list. And both being Ottolenghi fans and food lovers, we bought it and decided to review it together. So we were talking about how we would do this, and we decided it's not enough to just make one or two recipes. To do it properly, you really need to test a good cross-section of the book. So we decided to have a dinner party and invite friends to make and bring dishes, and we made a bunch ourselves, covering as many sections in the book as possible. But before we get into that process and into the book itself, let's talk about Ottolenghi. Kat, can you tell us a bit more about him?
Sure. He's an Israeli-born chef with Italian-German background. After studying comparative literature, he ended up at the Cordon Bleu in London. While working at the artisanal bakery Baker & Spice, he met Sami Tamimi, a Palestinian who also grew up in Jerusalem and who followed a similar path, but they had never met. They set up their first takeout place in 2002, followed by three more establishments, and also published a series of widely popular and critically acclaimed cookbooks, including Plenty, his first cookbook that put the spotlight on vegetables. For many years, Ottolenghi has also written the new vegetarian column in The Guardian. Many people see him as the leading authority on cooking plant-based cuisine.
Here's a clip from an interview he did with the Sydney Morning Herald.
Eating out and running restaurants is a pretty hedonistic exercise, and you need to balance it out with something else. And I think it's very important to champion a cause. For me, as someone who promotes vegetables, I think I'm doing that, but that's what feels closest to my heart, because in that sense, in that respect, I can do something that I love at the same time as showing that it's also the way forward. I mean, eating less meat is a necessity in my mind. It's almost like a small revolution that has happened with vegetables, because it used to be that they were always kind of relegated to the side. They were overcooked. Nobody gave them a lot of attention. I think now there is a sense that it's not so much about vegetarianism. It's just about redressing the balance, just having a kind of a celebration of vegetables and eating them and enjoying all the flavors.
There was corn blowing on a horn in the store. There was corn blowing on a horn in the corner grocery store. And there were beans trying on some jeans in the store. There were beans trying on some jeans in the corner grocery store.
So now that you know a bit more about the chef, here are some things that people have said about his new cookbook, Plenty More. The New York Times said,
Plenty More is farther flung. It gathers all of his previous influences and widens its grasp to include the Caribbean, India, Japan, and Thailand, sometimes all at once, with generally excellent results.
Food 52 said, "The brightness of flavors, the ability to make vegetables feel new, the measured balance between the unknown and the familiar, all of these make Yotam Ottolenghi's books a hit with home cooks." And here's Ottolenghi describing his book.
Plenty More is, in a sense, it's a reflection of my work over the last 4 years since Plenty was first published. And it reflects my travels, where I've been, ingredients that I've come across. But I think what is more important than anything else about Plenty More as opposed to Plenty is that it really focuses on the cooking methods that are involved in cooking, preparing vegetables. We go to a restaurant and they ask us, "How would you like your meat cooked, sir, madam?" And you go, "Oh, I love mine medium and I love mine rare, and if it's not right, you send it back." And that kind of reverence to meat we don't have towards vegetables. We don't send back our cauliflowers if it's overcooked. And I wanted to draw attention to that and how important it is to cook vegetables in the right way and how diverse results you can get if you cook vegetables in different ways. This is why I have got, like, the chapters are, you know, fried and roasted and steamed and baked, and each of these yields a very different result. And that's what I'm trying to put my finger out, that you take your cauliflower and if you roast it or if you char grill it or if you eat it raw or grated, you get such a different result.
One of the chief complaints about Ottolenghi cookbooks are that his recipes are too complex, too chefy, too fussy, and too time-consuming. These are all somewhat valid complaints.
Somewhat.
But nothing prepared us for this review we found on Amazon.com.
"I love vegetables and cookbooks more than most people, and yet I find these recipes creepy. I'm not exactly sure what I mean by that, but I tried to read this book several times, and each time I had to put it down after a few minutes. I did not find anything that I wanted to taste, let alone cook. Too many of the recipes are too much the same. Too many of them are too familiar in texture. Too many of them are too violently colored. You could not produce a meal out of this cookbook because everything would clash, yet still be oddly the same. Disaster if you have patterned plates."
Weird, right?
You find all kinds on the internet.
However, when it comes down to it, of the 145 Amazon.com reviews posted of the book so far, 114 gave it 5 stars, and only 8 people gave it below 3 stars. Which I'd say is pretty positive.
Another complaint that arises is that some of the more unusual ingredients, like pomegranate molasses, pandan leaves, umeboshi, curry leaves, quail eggs, and pomelos, may be hard to come by for those in more remote areas. Even people that live in urban centers where these things are available may have to make a special trip to buy them. Ottolenghi has partially addressed this by offering many on his online store, at a hefty price, no doubt. For people that love to cook and who see seeking out new ingredients as a kitchen adventure, and find it enjoyable to make a day out of browsing food shops, this isn't actually a strike against the book. But if you don't think that this sounds like a good time, maybe this isn't the cookbook for you. For the recipes we chose, nigella seeds and shiso leaves were the only ingredients that we didn't normally have in our pantry. But finding them wasn't a problem in a multicultural city like Montreal.
So continuing with our own thoughts about this cookbook. For our dinner party, we made 6 dishes from Plenty More, and had friends bring an additional 3 dishes.
We need cauliflower.
And we went shopping at Jean Talon Market for most of the ingredients.
This was something. $6.75. Long.
I see some butternuts over there. My God, they're huge. And then we got down to cooking.
It bakes for 45 minutes. And it can be served at room temperature. Okay. Everything's going to be served at room temperature.
Key.
This is great for a dinner party.
Yeah, that's true. I really don't like peeling potatoes.
Really?
I hate the shape of them. They're so difficult.
I like peeling potatoes.
Really?
You know what I hate peeling?
What?
I hate chopping garlic.
Oh, I don't mind that.
And I don't know, I have no explanation as to why. Well, I think it's because, you know, your hands get all sticky and like...
Yeah.
I just hate it.
Well, now we know. Next time we cook
together. I'll do the garlic next time. You...
Yeah.
It's 6:25?
Yeah.
I told people to come for 6:30. But, you know, people are usually late in Montreal, so I feel like it's all just going to come together really quickly.
Yeah, I think so.
The guests arrived, and before we dug in, we asked all the cooks about their experience cooking the dishes. First, we asked our friends Chrissy and Allie about what they made.
The grapefruit salad?
Yeah.
Who of the two of you was spearheading this?
Well, so I cut all the grapefruit up, and my hands were really, really, really cold. Should not have made this dish in winter.
Yeah.
It was a very simple salad to prepare.
Yeah. When you first looked at it, what did you think? Was it appealing to you?
I mean, the colors were really vibrant. Yeah. I think that's why we chose it. The only thing I'm wondering is it seems like it might be too wet. And then we made this beautiful dressing, which we used, like, some of the grapefruit, and then we added sugar, and we, like, reduced it on the stove. But I just wonder if we can use as much as we want, because, like, it seems like the rest of the salad's kind of already
wet.
But we tasted it already, and it was delicious.
Okay.
Nice. It's really good.
So, Marie, you made the barley sesame pudding with orange.
I think I did it right. I think the instructions were a little bit confusing, because it said I had to make, like, a syrup with orange zest and sugar and water, but then there was also orange blossom water in the recipe, and so it was just confusing between, like, when to put the orange blossom water and when to put the right. Anyway, all turned out okay. I'm not sure if it became, like, a thick syrup or if it was supposed to be, but the pudding, like, itself was easy to make. I ended up using pearl barley because it was faster to cook, and I didn't have the foresight to do it overnight. The recipe calls for whole milk, but I had almond milk, and I knew that there were going to be some, like, vegan / lactose intolerant people, so I don't know how different it's going to be with that. We'll see how it turned out.
So one last dish, Eva. So you made the apricot lavender walnut cake.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think?
Not the right season for it, because we didn't have apricots. I made it with dried apricots that I soaked beforehand, and then I added a bit of lemon juice and a little bit of sugar to make up for, like, it not being fresh. And I realized, because this time I was really trying to follow the recipe, because it was for this, and I realized that just, like, all the women in my family, I can't really follow a recipe, or, like, I need to always do little adjustments for myself. But, yeah, it was pretty easy. The rest was pretty clear, and, you know, it's not my first cake. Mm-hmm. So, hopefully it'll be nice. Good. Yeah.
This brings up two camps that cooks usually fall into. There are those that follow recipes to a T, and those are just unable to stick to the book. We actually talked about this a little bit while we were cooking.
Like, usually, even when I make these recipes, I'm, like, rarely by the book. Like, I tend to replace, omit, or whatever.
I like to try to follow it
the first time,
just to, you know, to see what it's like, and then I'll change it around.
I feel like I get a little annoyed. Like, just now when I was measuring all those little sauces out, usually I'm just like, glug, 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 glug.
Right.
I don't know, and I guess from experience, you just know. Like, you know the proportions and how it should taste, kind of, but you're part also, me, like, you're more of a baker.
I was gonna say, part of me really loves, like, following a recipe and measuring things out and...
Yeah.
It feeds, like, this anal retentive side of me.
I think I get bogged down by the details. Like, when we were buying goat's cheese, it said 3 ounces, and I'm like, I have no idea.
Right.
I'm sure that for this amount of leeks, we would need this amount of goat cheese. You know, it's more intuitive.
Right.
And those little details sometimes make me not want to cook, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Or they just take the fun out of cooking for me. Since we were reviewing the cookbook, we finally agreed that it was best to stick to the recipes as written, even if some of our guests didn't.
You know, I've noticed this thing that people do where they comment on online recipes and they say, well, I made this and it was pretty good, but I substituted the mushrooms for eggplant and the pasta for quinoa.
You know, I feel like people just sometimes comment for the sake of commenting. Like the other day I saw this recipe that I was like a mushroom toast with a poached egg on it. And the complaint in the comment section was that the poached egg wasn't pictured along with the recipe.
I mean, it's fine to leave your opinion on a recipe, but when you substituted half the ingredients, it's not the recipe anymore.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's more of a Frankenstein recipe at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, most credible cookbooks are recipe tested, and they have people that have tested these recipes and gone through all the amounts, you know, time and time again.
Exactly. You can't put out a recipe without having tested it multiple times to make sure that it stands up.
Yeah. And Ottolenghi himself said, I love the thought of someone getting to know one of my recipes and then adjusting it at home to suit their palate. But if something has 1/3 teaspoon of something in it, the chances are it has been tested with 1/4 teaspoon and 1/2 teaspoon before 1/3 was deemed correct.
And, I mean, knowing that and knowing that he said that, it makes me trust him. And trust his recipes.
Yeah, I mean, he is a professional chef after all. And we're just lowly
home cooks.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, after this experience, I think that I will be more vigilant in trying to make the recipe as written the first time. And then if I choose to make it again, you know, if I liked it, I'll put my own twist on it and make adjustments.
It also kind of makes me feel better about following recipes the first time because I've always felt a bit inferior when I talk to people who say that they never follow recipes and they always improvise or look at a recipe and then never follow it. But now I kind of have a reason to follow recipes.
Everybody, feel free to start serving yourselves.
Wow, this smells amazing.
Everything is really beautiful, I have to say.
Yeah. Everything is really beautiful.
It's super appealing.
Is this cauliflower?
Yeah.
It's cauliflower cake.
Ooh. It's salty cake. That's what I'm calling it.
What are the little things in the leek? The little
currants. Currants.
Oh. The leek is amazing, too.
Wow.
So good. Guys, this is so good.
So good.
Yeah, it's really good.
I think everything is good.
So after the meal, we had everyone rate all the dishes, the best being worth buying the book for, and the worst being bad. Nothing got a bad rating.
The dish that got the most votes for worth buying the book for was the sweet and sour leeks, but this dish also proved to be the most polarizing.
Whoa, this
is crazy, guys.
Okay,
the leeks. The leeks won.
Yeah.
I did not like those.
I didn't. Which I wasn't ones? Crazy Which about one? Them.
Like
the leeks were.
I got a really.
I like the leeks.
My main thing is that the sauce didn't really soak through, even though they were cooking in it for so long.
Yeah, there just wasn't enough flavor, and they were not sweet and sour.
Yeah.
I don't think the goat cheese really go with the leeks.
I think I like
the
way leeks
taste a lot. Yeah, the leeks got 4 people voting for buying the book.
Wow.
I don't like that.
The leeks?
That was me.
I didn't know that.
It also got the most so-so votes.
Really?
I really hated the leeks.
Yeah, I think we just heard that, Kat, from that audio clip. And you feel very strongly about it.
I still feel strongly about it weeks later.
But I think we need to admit something. We didn't use small leeks
because
we couldn't find them.
All that was available was big leeks.
Yeah.
Big, tough leeks.
I think that played a big part.
It might have been our fault.
So was I the only one that was buying the book for the cauliflower cake thing?
So now I think the cauliflower cake, which is by far the most Instagrammed dish from this cookbook, and it appears on the back cover of the book, I found that was a bit lacking myself. And I also feel like maybe the reason people make it is because it's very visually striking. It doesn't look like anything you've ever seen before with those, you know, purple onion rings across the top. And what do you think?
I agree with you that it's more visually striking than it is in taste.
As far as the book goes, I think there were a lot more interesting flavor combinations, but somehow this cauliflower cake drew us in as well.
I completely agree. I mean, I enjoyed it when I was eating it because I think it's comforting, but it's not interesting in the way that other dishes are interesting. I would definitely add some herbs or some extra spices the next time I was making it.
One of the real winners of the night was the grapefruit sumac salad.
The salad got almost across the board great and worth buying the book for. Nothing below great.
It was really delicious.
Yeah, I really love that. And it's actually, it's a great dish for the Canadian winter, which is so cold and so dreary. And to have this beautiful citrus salad.
Yeah.
That's, you know, beautiful to look at and striking to taste was, it was definitely a winner of the night.
Yeah. One of the last favorites was the apricot lavender cake, which Eva did a great job in preparing, despite the lack of fresh apricots at this time of the year.
I'd say the cake got number 3. All great and buying the book.
No one actually took skill. I think the combination of the lavender and the walnut and the glaze over the cake, I think it was really delicious.
Yeah, I agree.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like
the tomato? Other thing that we made and we actually haven't mentioned was the batata hara.
Yeah.
And that was just, it was roasted potatoes with
lemon and Aleppo pepper.
And wasn't there bell peppers in it as well?
Yeah.
And that was just so, so delicious. Yeah. Like, I would eat the whole pan of that for dinner on my own.
Yeah, it was kind of like home fries on steroids.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a few more that we haven't really talked about. We made the butternut tataki udon noodles.
Somebody would buy the book for that. Right.
I would.
I was scared.
We had the barley orange sesame pudding. These both got, you know, good ratings, but they weren't amongst the highest rated dishes. Mm-hmm. But another dish that was quite high rated was a steamed eggplant, which was also one of the simplest dishes. But just the steaming of the eggplant to me was kind of revolutionary. I would never have thought to steam eggplant in that way, where you peel it and you put it in a steamer and then you kind of shred it and then add some kind of sauce. In this case, it was a Japanese inspired sauce. Yeah, it was delicious. It was silky and
it's what eggplant should be.
Yeah.
I recently cooked eggplant and it wasn't very good. It was kind of tough and not tasty. Yeah. But in this way of cooking it made it so delicious.
Call any vegetable, call it, call it by name. So Kat, overall, do you like this cookbook?
Yeah, definitely. I'm really glad that I bought this cookbook. And I think what it is, for the most part, what I really like about it is the different cooking methods and flavor combinations that it's introduced me to.
Yeah.
And that's what I'll keep going back for. So even if I don't make a recipe as they specify, I'll use it as a source of inspiration.
Well, Food 52, in that same review, they actually said, you know, it's kind of a compromise, I think. If you follow Ottolenghi's very specific lead and follow that old advice of always making a recipe as written the first time, you're sure to not just come out of this with a beautiful, impressive, vibrant, sexy dish. You'll also take its components as a springboard for dinners when you can't be bothered with a recipe. So I think that kind of just sums up the cookbook. He introduces these flavor combinations, ingredients that you wouldn't normally think of as going together, and you don't necessarily have to have the book in front of you the next time. You might just take one or two things from it, but I think he's really, you know, getting our imaginations going when it comes to vegetables.
And I think that's a sign of a good cook and like a cook that can have lasting influence.
Yeah, as I have his other books, I think this is definitely becoming a staple in my kitchen.
So I think we've covered it all, and we really hope that you enjoyed our first podcast.
And we'd like to thank, first of all of the other cooks and dinner guests that participated in this review process, whether by preparing or just by eating and rating the dishes. And we'd also like to thank the other members of Roots and Recipes.
The songs you heard on today's podcast were Vegetables performed by the Beach Boys, Corner Grocery Store by Raffi, Colony Vegetable by Frank Zappa, Let's Call the Whole Thing Off performed by Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald, with additional music by Carl Spidla, me, Rebecca Lassard, and Martin Caesar.
See you next time.